your host, Michael Cohen, with a Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
It is 6:34 on a Wednesday evening in Lansing. I'm Michael Cohen. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, it's been solidly on the New York Times most emailed list since it was first posted this past weekend, and an opinion piece titled "Salt, We Misjudged You," questioning the premise that high salt intake is dangerous and we should limit our intake. Gary Taubes, is the writer of the opinion piece. He's also the author of the book "Why We Get Fat." He joins us now. Gary, thanks very much for coming on 1320 WILS.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, you know, you note in your piece the Department of Agriculture's dietary guidelines consider salt public enemy number one. It comes before fats, sugars, and alcohol. I guess it's just slightly healthier than rat poison. Tell me, how did salt get this distinction by the health of, by health officials?
Well, I would argue it got it because the anti-salt crowd has been arguing so loudly for so long that salt is bad for us. And regrettably, with such an absence of compelling evidence, that it just kind of rose slowly to the top. You know, there have been people have taken on the idea that saturated fat is bad for us and dietary fat, but the people who are taking on the bad science and salt just kind of got tired of fighting and went back to their lives. And
mm-hmm. Tell me, though, isn't high salt intake directly linked to high blood pressure for many Americans?
Well, no, that's the problem. It's not. It's virtually it's proven excruciatingly difficult to demonstrate in either an experimental study or an observational study that the people who have hypertension, high blood pressure, got it from eating a high salt diet. If you look at countries around the world, like dozens of countries around the world, and look at their salt consumption and their range of sort of normal blood pressures, and there's no correlation.
You're saying ultimately high salt intake is not the cause for high blood pressure, as medical professionals are now saying?
Well, I would argue that it's not, but to be precise, what I'm saying is that the evidence that it is stinks.
Now, you know that there are some studies that actually found that eating less salt can worsen health. How exactly can that be?
Well, that's the latest train of evidence, and that's kind of what prompted me to finally write this op-ed. You know, I first addressed this issue with no bias whatsoever back in 1998 as a correspondent for the journal Science. I spent a year on one magazine article, interviewed about 80 authorities, read all the literature. Came to this conclusion then that the evidence was terrible. But then, as you mentioned, just keeps building and building this push to restrict salt. And then in the last 2 to 3 years, there have been this series of papers suggesting that if salt consumption gets even close to what the government is telling us is the safe upper limit, it starts increasing our risk of, you know, what the experts call mortality and morbidity or, death and sickness. And there's even been a couple of clinical trials from Italy where they took patients with heart failure and randomized half of them to a salt-restricted diet plus, you know, the proper drug therapy, and the other half to no salt restriction and drug therapy. And the group getting the salt restriction did worse. And heart failure is one of those areas where salt restriction is supposed to, you know, really benefit.
You know, many people who are listening, they hear this information. We've heard contradicting information when it comes to fats. I mean, how are we supposed to make any sense of all these different ideas when we continually hear that this is good, and now this is bad, but now it's good again?
Yeah, now this is a real problem. I mean, not only that, but now you're hearing this is good again from a journalist, and why should you trust a journalist when you've got all these doctors and, you know, researchers? And I just had a discussion today on the phone for an hour with a physician from Yale who disagrees with my conclusions, and he was arguing, you know, it's very important. That's what they argue. It's very important that we all say the same thing and we say it consistently, because otherwise the public won't listen to us and they'll get confused. And my counter argument, isn't it better that some of us are right than that all of us say the same thing?
I mean,
I don't know what the solution. I honestly don't know what the solution is.
I mean, could it be that, look, it's known that the American diet is not a particularly healthy one. Could it be that when you take a fairly unhealthy diet and then you add salt to it, that's when the problems happen, and maybe it's better to not have as much salt when you're eating a generally unhealthy diet?
Well, and that would be one actually very reasonable conclusion. And then the question is, how do we define a generally unhealthy diet? And in fact, the study that I cite in the New York Times piece is sort of the foundation for our sodium pushed, anti-salt push today. It was a study called Dash Sodium. And this study basically showed that if you're eating a generally healthy diet, salt was mostly irrelevant. So the question is, how do we, you know, what's an unhealthy diet? And the arguments I've been making in my books is that, you know, we got obsessed in the 1960s with the idea that dietary fat was the problem and salt was the problem and saturated fat was the problem, and then this notion that we just eat too much and exercise too little. Mm-hmm. And the reality, back in the 60s, there was a counter hypothesis, we'll call it, which is that the problem in Western diets is the sugar and refined grain consumption. This was a British hypothesis, and it had a lot to recommend it and a lot of evidence to support it. And I argue in my books that you know, a huge proportion of the evidence that's been generated since the 1960s actually supports this argument that what we should be avoiding is sugar and refined grain, sugar and white flour.
That,
you know, when you go on diets restricted in sugar and white flour, and unfortunately these are, you know, they get wrapped up in this whole idea of the Atkins diet. But there have been clinical trials, experiments, where they put people on the Atkins diet and compare them to, you know, the diets we're supposed to eat. Not only do the people on this Atkins diet have better heart disease risk factors, but their blood pressure drops significantly.
I'm talking to Gary Taubes. He's the author of the book Why We Get Fat. You can find his op-ed on salt in the New York Times right now. So when it comes to why we get fat, are you saying the answer really is then sugar and this starchy white food that we eat, and ultimately that's what we need to cut out from our diet to remain healthy?
Absolutely. That's the you know, again, we have this sort of a conventional wisdom that it's all about eating too much and exercising too little. And weirdly enough, I think that's ridiculous. And the first half of my book, Why We Get Fat, explains why I think that's ridiculous. And
but when you look at Europeans, I mean, they are another developed area of the world. They appear to be much skinnier than us. Do they themselves eat that much less sugar?
Yeah, we eat among the highest sugar intake in the world here, and sugar in their diet it's always been lower, and there are reasons to think that the problems caused by sugar get passed on from generation to generation. So the longer you've had a high sugar diet in your population, the worse the obesity, type 2 diabetes gets.
Is it basically though an addiction problem? Is that what it ends up looking like?
Well, again, it's hard to define it as an addiction. Although I think it is. I think anyone who has a child or a sweet tooth, pretty clear that sugar is addictive. But you know, what we're talking about is fundamentally how these nutrients are metabolized. So you could think of the major factor in obesity or what regulates your weight is the amount of energy that these, you know, your diet carries. So they 2,000 calories a day, and that's all that matters compared to how much you exercise. The other idea is that, you know, our bodies are very well regulated biologically, and that when we eat different nutrients, and by nutrients I mean fats or proteins or carbohydrates or the type of carbohydrates, they have vastly different effects on the hormones that actually regulate how much fat we accumulate in our body. So one person could eat 100 calories of sugar a day and be fine, and the other person could eat 100 calories of sugar a day and it will make them fat. And it will do them by causing this, you know, if the science is correct, it'll do it by you know, causing this condition called insulin resistance, which leads them to over-secrete this hormone insulin, and that pushes fat in their fat tissue.
Is this information? I mean, I think it's well known, though, right at this point by the medical community that this is kind of the underlying problem. Is it not? Are doctors not acknowledging that this is the core of the problem now?
Well, they think the problem is that sugar. It's this idea that sugar is just empty calories. So everyone will say we overconsume sugar. We should consume less of it. The sugar industry loves this argument, by the way, just because they can say if you're fat, you overconsume everything. So there's nothing different about sugar other than that you happen to like it a lot. But it's all about, still all fundamentally about the calories consumed.
So if you're saying sugar is the problem, I mean, how little sugar should the average American consume on any given day?
Well, see, that's the question, and I really can't give you an answer. Certainly, the sugar-sweetened beverages are known. So we're talking sodas and fruit juices. You know, there's no reason for anyone to consume them, and they're probably doing that. You know, as far as my reading of the science, they're doing them a great deal of harm. Then the question is, you know, what sugars do you get in the diet naturally? So, you know, we get sugar in fruit. That's what makes it sweet. And if you're very obese or overweight, I would argue that you're not doing yourself any favors by eating fruit. In fact, you might prevent weight loss merely by eating something like a couple of apples a day, regardless of the calories.
What about alcohol, regular alcohol consumption? Do you think that's a major issue in obesity?
Well, beer certainly seems to be. That's why they invented the term beer belly. Hard liquor gets complicated and wine gets complicated. You know, there are people who have pushed carb-restricted diets where they allowed, you know, red wine's fine because there's a much lower sugar content than white wine, and that's why it's not as sweet. You know, again, it depends on the individual and how severe their obesity or type 2 diabetes is.
I see.
I'm all for enjoying life.
You're saying, though, in terms of calorie intake, do you think that there is a limit in the calories that someone should be intaking, or as long as it's not sugar-based and starchy white food, that you really should not, that should not be a concern, and you can lose weight eating to fullness?
Well, what I'm arguing is that if you don't eat the sugars and the refined carbs and the starches, so if you're eating a diet that's mostly fat and protein and a lot of fat, so that's, you know, again, the Atkins diet is a sort of iconic example of this diet. If you're eating that diet and you get rid of the carbs, your body starts to work the way it's supposed to work. So now it releases fat from the fat tissue. You burn that fat for fuel. And you lose these, you know, and it's a common observation, you stop thinking about food all the time when you're eating this way because your body is doing what it's supposed to do. So your body starts functioning like your lean friends and siblings' bodies work.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you avoid the carbs, your body's always going to work correctly.
One last thing, about a minute left, but in terms of if you are a soda addict, if you go to diet soda, is that a better option in your mind than sugary stuff?
I think it's certainly a better option. I think there's also evidence that some people, you know, that diet, some people's bodies may not recognize that the diet soda doesn't have sugar in it. So if you were gave up carbs, gave up sugar, and you weren't losing any weight, and you were drinking six, you know, diet Coca-Colas every day, I'd suggest weaning yourself off the Diet Coke and seeing if that helps.
I see. Well, certainly eating a healthy diet is a good thing in general, but losing weight is something we, most of us, do want to do. Gary Taubes, the author of the book Why We Get Fat, you can find his op-ed piece on salts on the New York Times website right now. Gary, thank you very much for joining us on WYLS.
Thank you, Mike. It was great.
And we will be right back to talk about an event right here in Lansing next Thursday. It involves your future and getting an idea of how to avoid bankruptcy as you go into retirement based on the simple fact that you may get sick in a serious way. Many people do, and there's a way to avoid the potential nightmare that may follow. But you'll find out exactly what that is next. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WYLS.